Amazon announced on Thursday its short list of cities from the original 238 that made their case for being the e-commerce giant's second headquarters. The short list is more of a shorter list, with 20 cities now in contention. Major metros New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, and Washington, D.C. making the cut, including Toronto, the only city on the list that's not in the U.S.
Facebook's popular messaging app WhatsApp is looking to make money, and it's moving in on business users. On Thursday, WhatsApp said it was launching business accounts for the first time, a free service for now. WhatsApp, a pun on WhatsApp, was bought by Facebook in 2014 for $19 billion. It used to cost $1 a year to use it, but that fee was dropped in 2016. And the company and Facebook don't want ads to clutter it, raising the challenges of making money from such a huge user base.
New Zealand's new prime minister stepping out with her husband on Friday with some unexpected news. Jacinda Ardern will take on parenthood when she gives birth in June. She plans to take a six-week break, during which time Deputy Prime Minister Winston Peters will step in. Her pregnancy is one of the very few examples of an elected leader holding office while pregnant. Pakistan's Benazir Bhutto gave birth while in office in 1990, in what was said to be a world first.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It's January 19th. Glad you're here with us for the last episode of the week, the last business day of the week. We made it to Friday, and we've got a great broadcast for you today. Later in the program, we're going to be talking about American Airlines adding a new shuttle between Chicago and New York City. Brian Summers will be here from Skift. In a minute, we'll bring in Paul Nolte, who's here for our regular Friday conversation about the economy and our portfolios. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, futures are pointing toward opening gains on Wall Street later this morning. Up 85 right now on the Dow. S&P and NASDAQ futures are higher as well. Crude oil is at $63.74 a barrel, which is down about 21 cents. Around the rest of the world, it looks like the markets in Asia are generally higher, with the Hang Seng up almost a half a percent, 132 points. Everything else up there as well. In Europe, markets are higher as well. In Germany, up almost a percent, 131 points. In France, up almost a half a percent. And in London, up almost a third. A couple of big stories we're watching for you. Of course, you heard there in the opening montage, the number of cities in the Amazon hunt has been knocked down from 220 by Amazon. A list released yesterday has Chicago on that list, as well as New York, Los Angeles, Atlanta, Nashville, Tennessee, and Columbus, Ohio. Seattle-based Amazon says it will make a final decision by the end of the year. A global energy agency says that U.S. oil production is booming and is forecast to top that of heavyweight Saudi Arabia and Russia this year. The International Energy Agency says that oil production in the U.S. has also already risen to its highest level in nearly 50 years and will push past 10 million barrels a day as higher prices entice more producers to start pumping. And in Washington, a divided House yesterday passed an 11th-hour plan to keep the government running. But the GOP-written measure faces gloomy prospects in the Senate, where a vote could come as early as midday today. It remains unclear whether lawmakers will be able to find a way to keep federal offices open past a Friday night deadline at midnight. Let's begin there with Paul Nolte this morning. Paul from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. He's here with us as he is every Friday. Paul, good morning. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday to you. Good morning.
What would a government shutdown do to Wall Street?
Not a lot. This is not unusual for the government to do this. The last time, I think, was in 2013. During the Carter administration, every year they had the government shut down for a period of time. During the Reagan administration, it happened a variety of times as well. So it's not an unusual occurrence. And there's enough money still in the coffers, if you will, that they don't have to stop paying people just yet. It depends on how long it goes. Then the last shutdown was for 16 days. So it's not an unusual occurrence. I don't think it's going to have a major impact on Wall Street as well as the overall economy. It's politics and not so much an economic impact.
Lots of employees will be furloughed. There'll be people out of work. I guess the longer it goes is when we start thinking about the potential problems to the economy.
Right. That's where the damage can be done. And you start shutting down different agencies and so on. So that's what I said. You know, for a week or two, not too big a deal. But you skip beyond 2-3 weeks, then we start seeing some economic impacts.
You watch the week as I did. Anything jump off the page at you in terms of big economic news or policy?
Not too much. We saw industrial production pick up. Consumer confidence is still very, very high, multi-year high levels. So we're seeing, again, when you look at the economic surprises, if you will, the only real surprise was a little turn down in housing starts. Multifamily housing is up a little bit. So again, from an economic perspective, not too much. We're getting into the middle of earnings season, so we're hearing comments now from companies on what the tax plan impact is going to be. Apple was a big one in saying that they were going to be hiring a huge amount of people and expanding some of their production. We're seeing and hearing that from other companies. Some of the financials actually are taking some write-downs in anticipation of costs associated with the new tax plan. So it's hitting different companies, different industries differently. So again, overall, I think you're going to see a better earnings picture, and a lot of companies are talking up their earnings prospects as a result of the tax plan.
Well, let's talk a minute about Apple, because, correct me if I'm wrong, but I read that Apple is the biggest taxpayer in the U.S. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And $2,500 bonuses, $300 billion in economic potential coming back to the U.S. That's how much I guess they're going to repatriate, right?
Well, yeah, that and it's going to be spread over 5 years. And when you look at it in the context of a multi-trillion dollar economy, it's not it's a big number, but it is not a super big needle-moving number for the U.S. economy. But you're seeing a lot of those from different companies, Apple certainly being the largest U.S. company and, by extension, going to be one of the largest taxpayers.
The company is giving Class B stock. What is that?
It's a non-voting share. There's many companies that have Class A, Class B, and the reason they divide those classes really is to keep ownership. So Class A generally is those that have more shares of the company and are able to vote proxies, vote for CEOs, vote for board members, etc. Class B generally is non-voting shares. They normally will trade very much in tandem. But you may also, with some of the B shares, have different dividend rights as well. So there may be a lower dividend, higher dividend. It kind of depends on how they structure it.
Paul, hang on. We'll continue our conversation here with Paul Nolte.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. Paul Nolte is here from Kingsview Asset Management today. For our regular Friday conversation, Paul, we were talking about earnings going into the break there. And we see a lot of earnings now that have the one-time charge for the tax bill. That's sort of one of the headlines. What does that mean?
What that means is they're taking a write-off of whatever the expenses are, the taxes, the added taxes. It's a one-time charge. And what that does is, by taking that out, what you're able to do then is take a look at their ongoing operations and what does that mean for the company. If you include those charges, then you wind up with earnings that tend to be all over the place, and that's really not a good indication of what their long-term growth potential is or earnings potential. So you have many times a lot of companies, when they are divesting of a division or something like that, or as part of a merger, they have these one-time charges that get rolled out. And a lot of analysts take those out of their estimates when they go forward and try to determine the value of the company. What's interesting, though, about that is there are a lot of companies that have one-time charges every year. So
that's the hard part of it.
That's the hard part, is trying to determine if it is truly one-time or if it's a one-time ongoing.
So the question is, if we're watching our portfolios and watching some of these companies, how do we take that out ourselves?
Well, it's hard to do. That's where the analysts come in and parse all the numbers and so on. And what we're really looking at when we start talking to the companies is what we're hearing from them is about what they're seeing going forward as far as their long-term growth expectations, where they see opportunities in the markets, both U.S. and international. So we're paying more attention to the commentary on the conference call than we are so much about the numbers. We're trying to get into the guts of the company to see really what their opportunities are.
With the tax bill, some companies are going to be seeing better earnings than others, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. We're already starting to see some of those companies talk about, again, added industrial production, production numbers, expansion of plant and equipment. We're also seeing a lot of money going to employees. So we highlighted Apple. Walmart has made the same announcement. Some of the other companies are doing similar things, too. So there is some benefit to some of the employees for that.
I was watching Bitcoin this week and thinking, I sure hope none of our listeners mortgage their home or homes to buy Bitcoin. Bitcoin this morning is at 11,634. It was close to 20,000. Recently.
Yeah, just right around Christmas time.
Yeah.
We were talking about it at that time, going from Thanksgiving to Christmas, and it had doubled. It was up from 1,000 at the beginning of last year to 20,000. So it's not a surprise to see it come down as much as it has. It was just at an unsustainable pace.
And your advice still is to avoid it?
Stay way clear. Stay way clear.
What else, Paul, should we talk about here at the end of the week? What do you like?
Well, you know, it's interesting. We'd still like the international. We've talked about it for a while. It's one of those long-term trends that we think are occurring in the marketplace where valuations for the U.S. are very expensive relative to the rest of the world. We see international very inexpensive, especially compared to the U.S., as well as their own historical averages. So emerging markets still provide a lot of opportunity, we think. We're starting to look at the commodity sector. We're now 8-9 years into this expansion, and historically when you get to the end of an economic cycle, you start to see those inflationary pressures, and we've talked about the lack of inflation ad nauseum here, but I think we're starting to see some of that work into the pipeline with higher energy prices, some of the metals prices a little bit higher. So we're starting to look at commodities and maybe start to put some of those companies and investments into portfolios.
There was another report yesterday that perhaps President Trump will make a decision to pull us out of NAFTA, even though he's been strongly advised not to do that. How would pulling out of NAFTA affect some of these international markets that we may be looking at?
It will hurt trade overall. You know, he's talked about pulling out of the TPP and has done some of that. He's looking to try to do bilateral agreements as opposed to these very large trade agreements. The implications are not good for trade. It's going to increase prices for U.S. consumers. It's going to hurt our export markets. So we're going to be selling less overseas. So we're going to see companies maybe not their revenue numbers come down, especially those that are international in nature. Our two largest trading partners are Mexico and Canada by far. So it's going to have some major implications for U.S. trade as well as economic growth going forward.
There was a report yesterday, CNN Money did a survey of this, 300,000 jobs, American jobs it could cost if NAFTA goes away.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the discussion when this was passed was we're going to see job loss, a lot of jobs going to Mexico, et cetera. We have seen some of that. But we've also created so many different jobs and industries in the United States as a result of that. So by reversing it, I think it's going to have a rough impact, or it's going to be impacting the U.S. economy in a negative way if we actually do go through with this. I don't know what the odds are at this point. It's a discussion. We'll wait until we get a little bit closer to that reality.
Anything good for the weekend? What do you got going on?
Well, we're going to be traveling to some warm climes. We've got a conference to go down in Florida. We'll be talking commodities again to an ETF conference. Exchange-traded funds has their big shindig down in Florida. So we'll be down there for the early part of next week and talking financial markets, the economy, and commodities.
Well, good deal. Safe travels, and we'll see you back next Friday.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. You can find more about Paul at kingsview.com.
Hi, this is Jim Dahlke with today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoInno.com. Amazon announced that Chicago is one of 20 cities to make the e-commerce giant's shortlist for its second headquarters. Joining Chicago on the list are New York, Boston, Austin, LA, Dallas, Atlanta, and others. The early frontrunner, it seems, is the Washington, D.C. area, which has three locations in the top 20. Amazon will make its choice later this year. In other tech office news, Chicago is officially interested in Apple's plans to open a new campus. Apple said this week it plans to open a new campus and hire 20,000 additional workers, and Mayor Rahm Emanuel said Chicago plans to compete for the space. Apple also said it will announce its chosen city later this year. And Chicago payment startup OnPlan has been acquired by fintech company Flywire. OnPlan, a payment solution for healthcare and higher ed industries, launched in 2014 and raised $2.45 million in angel funding. That's today's Inno Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoInno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. It's 538. We're glad you're here with us for our Friday edition of The Opening Bell. Some big news from American Airlines this week. They're starting a new commuter shuttle between Chicago and New York City. It is a big deal for people, especially business travelers. Thought we'd talk about it this morning with Brian Summers, who's a business airline reporter at Skift in our regular Friday business and airline segment here. Brian is with us from Skype. Brian, talk to us a little bit more about this decision. A pretty big announcement from American Airlines.
Yeah, people say that airlines don't like their customers, but it's not always true. American announced this week that it's going to launch what it calls shuttle service to New York LaGuardia from O'Hare. Things won't change all that much. American's going to have 15 flights a day, which is more or less as many as American has today. But they're going to be every hour, exactly once an hour. And people in coach, including in the last row of coach, the worst seat, are going to get free beer and wine. It competes with Delta that offers a similar service. United doesn't have it, but airlines do like to copy each other. So who knows? United might launch free beer and wine as well.
Why do you think they made this decision now, and who do you think they're going after? I'm guessing business clients.
Yeah, it's really business travelers. Chicago to New York is one of the most important air routes in the United States, and it's possible that American was losing some travelers to Delta, which has had this service for a while. It's also possible that American wanted to treat its customers a little bit better. I mean, free beer and wine, it may cost $8 to buy a beer on an airplane, but for an airline, it doesn't cost that much. And so this is a relatively inexpensive way to keep travelers happy. And then another thing that American's going to do is there are going to be dedicated gates in Chicago and New York for these flights. And business travelers flying to New York, they want to cut it as close as possible. They don't get to the airport 2 hours early. So we can assume that in Chicago, probably the two closest gates to the roadway are going to be dedicated to the flights to LaGuardia.
Is it surprising that United doesn't have something like this already in place?
I don't know if it's surprising. I mean, United has probably 15 flights a day, maybe slightly more, slightly less. So on frequency, they compete. Perhaps United didn't think that it needed to have the same onboard experience as Delta, but American competes very fiercely with United in Chicago. And so we'll see what happens.
Brian, people want to arrive on time on their flights. There's some stats coming out of at least late last year that says at least some of the airlines were doing better when it comes to on-time flight. Tell us about it.
Yeah, U.S. airlines are on time right now a lot more than pretty much any time in history. In November, which is when the latest data is available, the 12 largest airlines posted an on-time arrival performance of 88%. Now, that's not quite on time because it counts flights that arrived 14 minutes late. But it's still a pretty good rate, and airlines are also canceling a lot fewer flights. So those dozen largest airlines canceled about 3 flights of every 1,000 domestic flights in November. Again, a pretty good rate.
What does this bode for 2018?
Well, I think we're going to see even fewer canceled flights. Delta actually has a trademark. They call themselves the On-Time Machine. They are obsessed with on-time performance. They're also obsessed with not canceling flights. So last year, on 242 days, Delta didn't cancel a single mainline flight. Those are flights with larger jets. United has also made a priority. They're a lot further behind Delta in terms of reliability, but United's getting better. And so I think 2018 will be a very good year for on-time performance.
You know, airlines sort of thrive on these fees now, all kinds of fees and upgrades and you name it. You've written a cool story here about how people are paying for upgrades out of their own pocket, and airlines are finally kind of seeing that.
Yeah, you know, nothing delights a traveler so much as a free first-class upgrade. And over the last 15 to 20 years, a lot of travelers got accustomed to buying a coach ticket and getting upgraded for free. Those were people that flew probably at least 50,000 miles. They were relatively loyal to an airline, and an airline rewarded them by giving them the best seats on the plane for free. Within the last few years, airlines have decided, again, led by Delta, hey, you know, first class is the best area of the plane. Why are we giving away these seats for free? Let's make people buy them. And so now, even if you fly 50,000 years on an airline, or 50,000 miles a year on an airline, or you fly 75,000 miles a year on an airline, you still will get very few first class upgrades. So that means if you want to sit up there, you have to buy it. Now, the obvious thing would be people would say, well, I'm fine in coach, it's comfortable enough, and I'm not going to buy up there. But what Delta talked about seeing last week is that business passengers will charge their company for an economy class ticket, and then they will go into the mobile app or they'll go on the website a little bit later, and they will buy the difference between coach and first class, and they will put it on their own credit card. So that's how much people like sitting up there.
Is it more for their own comfort or because they have maybe a little extra cash in their pocket, or why do you think they're doing this?
Well, I think a lot of business travelers got used to flying in first class, especially during this period when they were sitting up there for free. They may miss it. I think a lot of Americans right now, because of the stock market, have a little bit extra cash in their pocket, and they're probably willing to spend it on a better experience.
Another story that you've written is about the lounges in airports, or the airlines run these lounges with all of the cutbacks and penny pinching. This is one area where airlines still seem to have these lounges at the airports.
Yeah, you know, most airlines have a pretty big lounge system. They've got lounges in a lot of airports. People who haven't been in a lounge probably get this idea that they're exclusive, they're beautiful, they have great food, they have a really good top shelf liquor. In most cases, they don't. They're much more likely to be dark and dreary, uninviting, usually with bad food or almost no food at all. But the thing is, no matter how mediocre a lounge is, there's still a line of people that wants to get in there. And people get lounge access with credit cards. They get lounge access by being a frequent flyer. And as you mentioned, airlines are trying to cut everything. They probably would prefer not to run these airport clubs because they're expensive. And yet, because travelers like them, they persist, and there's no sign that they're going anywhere.
And so I guess the thrust of this is if some of these airlines decided to start pulling these, there'd probably be a protest.
Yeah, there might be a protest. You know, passengers wouldn't want their lounges to be taken away. You know, maybe if United were to get rid of lounges, and they're not going to, but passengers might actually move to another airline. And that's a concern for airlines. Now, we do have one U.S. airline that doesn't have lounges. It's JetBlue Airways, and they decided a few years ago that even though they have a business class, they just do not want to get into this game. It's too expensive, and it's too difficult to maintain the lounges.
You fly a lot. Do you get to have access to these lounges, and which ones are the best in your mind?
Well, it's funny, you know, in the piece, I'm a little bit critical of this idea of the lounges because, of course, they're not very nice. And yet, I fly all the time, and I pretty much always use a lounge. I enjoy them. You know, nothing gets you so excited as a free Bud Light that you've probably paid for in 100 different ways. I should say that I have a baby right now, and so the changing tables are actually better in the airport clubs, and that's been an unexpected perk because I wouldn't have realized that 5 years ago. You know, one of the best lounges in the United States is this Polaris Lounge that United has in Chicago, but that's only available to long-haul business class travelers, so general people don't have a chance to get in there.
Interesting you mentioned the baby. I was on a flight recently, and I guess the parents brought their baby on for the first time, and they had gift bags for everybody on the plane. Is that like a new thing, or has that been going on for a while?
You know, I think it's been going on for a while. As a new parent, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. We were on a flight recently with our baby, and we did not have gift bags, but somebody gave us gift bags. I mean, I think there's an understanding among people who travel a lot, and that's me, and I often travel without the baby, that there's going to be one or two or three or four babies on an airplane. And even if you're the most hardened road warrior, you have to accept that. These airplanes are not places where babies can't go. Babies are on the plane. We were all babies once. Babies make noise. And I think you just have to deal with it. I mean, that said, these goody bags, I suppose, are a nice touch.
Brian, it's always good chatting with you. We'll see you next week.
Great. Thank you.
Brian Summers is a business airline reporter at Skift. And make sure you check into Skift. You can also sign up for their weekly airline innovation report at skift.com/airline. And you can follow them on Twitter at Skift and follow Brian as well at Brian Summers on Twitter.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures on the Dow 103 points higher, looking for a strong open on Wall Street later this morning. NASDAQ and S&P futures are higher as well. Let's get the latest on commodities and agriculture this morning. Orion Samuelson's with us. Good morning, Orion.
Well, good morning to you, and I assume that you're a little cooler than we are here in the desert. We're about 51 degrees here this morning.
It is.
Yes, you're a little cooler than
a little
that.
Bit cooler, but you know what? It feels like it's warming up. You know that you can feel the air, the warmer air coming in.
Right. Yeah.
So maybe 50 here tomorrow.
Oh, good. Yeah, I hope it does. Yeah. Well, as we look at the NAFTA situation, it continues to move very slowly. But talks will take place in Montreal later this month to update the North American Free Trade Agreement. And the talks will be extended by one day as Mexico and the United States exchanged insults. The negotiations have bogged down as Canada and Mexico resist radical demands from the United States to revise the rules governing one of the world's largest trading blocs. President Donald Trump still threatening to abandon NAFTA unless major changes are made to the 1994 treaty. So negotiators had originally been due to meet from January 23 to 28. U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer, Mexican Economy Minister Ildefonso Gallardo, and Canadian Foreign Minister Chrystia Freeland joining on the final day of the round of talks, and they will now do so on January 29th instead. But don't hold your breath on this one, because it's going to take a while, and we're rapidly approaching the Mexican election, and they wanted to have it in place by the Mexican elections. Meanwhile, the livestock had a pretty good day yesterday. The February lean hog contract gained 57 cents a hundredweight. February live cattle moved up $1.05, and January feeder cattle moved up $1.42 in the trade yesterday. As soybeans moved higher, and again, one of the reasons, weather worries in Argentina that lifted soybean meal, and fourth straight session on Thursday that we saw the soybean futures move to the highest in nearly 2 weeks. Concerns over dry conditions in Argentina that could reduce the soybean crop in that country. And one other note today, the CropLife America annual meeting At last September, it was announced that CEO Jay Vroom will retire from his position at the end of this year. And so they're now starting their search for a new person to take over as CEO of CropLife America. So a little bit of what's going on here this morning.
Orion, I'm curious, back to the NAFTA thing. We talked earlier with Paul about this, about the larger economy, possibly 300,000 jobs if NAFTA goes away. But from the agriculture part of this, yesterday, even as early as yesterday, late as yesterday, president saying that he thinks we can get a better deal by getting out of NAFTA. And I'm still confused about that. What is he thinking?
Well, he has a feeling that bilateral trade agreements are better than the multi-trade agreements. As soon as he moved into the White House, he canceled any participation we might have had in the Pacific Trade Partnership, got out of that one. He said, let's do it country by country. And apparently he's carrying that thinking into the NAFTA round, because he said any agreement that's been in place for over 20 years needs some touching up, some tweaking. And he said, while it seems to have worked well for farmers, other industries, the automotive industry and other industries and trade between the three countries have apparently deteriorated in the mind of President Trump. So we'll see.
What do we have on the show tomorrow morning?
Well, on the show tomorrow, we're going to talk to David Hightower. David is a analyst and an advisor in the market world, but he has probably done more in researching the Chinese market than most analysts and traders. He goes there frequently, and so we're going to talk to David and catch up with his views on China and where that trade situation might be going, because there is concern again. President Trump says, hey, we are building a trade deficit with China that's way too big, and we got to work on it. So that makes soybean growers pretty nervous.
All right, Orion, we'll be listening. Have a great weekend.
You too, Steve.
All right, Orion Samuelson, the morning show with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong tomorrow morning at 5 right here on 720 WGN. Now, the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Friday, January 19th. The American Bankers Association Economic Advisory Committee forecast is out today. It's also the March for Life. Also, the House of Representatives and the Senate standing by for this deal that could avert a government shutdown. The House voted yesterday, the Senate likely to vote today. And we'll also get consumer sentiment today from the University of Michigan. Some of the things that could move the markets on this Friday, January 19th.